selected moments from that story that give you a sense of the effort, that give you a sense of the work that was put in or the study that was put in. But you don't really get to see the quiet moments, the self-reflection, the moments of doubt. You don't really get to see the full spectrum of the experiences of that character as he or she grapples with whatever it is that's facing them, whatever mountain or challenge or tournament is facing them. And the same is true with the Bible at times. The same is true with the Bible. It's really easy sometimes to read the Bible without appreciating just how much effort the great heroes of faith put into their activities. A couple of examples just by way of introduction. And these aren't the examples we're going to spend most of our time on, but just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about here. When you read about the life of Abraham, we are first introduced to him in Genesis chapter 11, but we see his call here in Genesis chapter 12. And notice the way that it's described here in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 4. Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go forth from your country and from your relatives, from your father's house, to the land which I will show you, and I'll make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing, and I'll bless those who bless you. And the one who curses you, I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Now, you might, if you've never read the Bible before at least, you might think that that's just summed up pretty quickly in Abram's life. But actually, these verses take several thousand years, I mean generation after generation, to finally come to fruition. He goes on to say in verse 4, "So Abram went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him." I mean, that's easy to read, isn't it? So Abram went forth. But what does that really mean? When it says he went forth, you can read that in about 2 seconds. So Abram went forth and Lot with him. But what is involved in that very short statement is actually incredible effort as Abram and his entire family move across the desert to a land that is not their own, to a foreign land, to a dialect that they're not used to customs and laws and traditions and terrain as well that they're not used to. And all of it taking place on foot. Not just Abram and his immediate relatives, like his wife, but also everybody attached to his household as well. Everybody attached to his household. And livestock. And all of this again, on foot. Later on in chapter 12, verse 10, and going into chapter 13, verse 1, we also read, it's just a very incidental thing on the page, that he happened to go down to Egypt. And then he returned from Egypt back to the land of Canaan. Now again, it's very easy to read those verses without kind of stopping and realizing just how much effort must have been involved in all of these activities. How about Moses? When you read in Exodus chapter 2, from verse 10 to 11, Exodus 2, 10 to 11 is 40 years. 40 years between those verses. A third of his life takes place between those verses. And then when you read about his life in the land of Midian, you don't get a lot of details. It just says, oh, and he also spent some time in Midian, and he got married, and he was working as a shepherd. Another 40 years of his life in just a matter of a couple verses. Two-thirds of his lifetime takes place within about a chapter. Two-thirds of his lifetime, 80 years. There are entire campaigns that were fought by King David before, both before and after he was king. There were entire campaigns that were fought by David that only occupy a few words on the page. So everywhere David went, he found success and he was victorious. But that doesn't explain just how many months, how many years even were involved in some of the campaigns, some of the wars that he fought against the Philistines. Effort. Work. I think my personal favorite is the description of David's mighty men when you get to 2 Samuel. Go and open up. I just want to read a couple verses here to give you a sense of this. In 2 Samuel chapter 23, you read about basically just the very short version of the exploits of David's mighty men. And these are just a few of the highlights. But again, it doesn't show sometimes if you're just kind of reading through it, and you're just reading through it as like your daily Bible reading, and you happen to get to 2 Samuel 23, and you realize, uh-oh, I gotta leave and catch the bus here in a few minutes, and you kind of glaze over it, you don't realize just how much effort goes into all the things that David's mighty men do. I mean, these are guys who killed giants and fought off Philistines on a plot of land. My favorite one is this guy down here in verse 20. Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man of Kabzeel, who had done mighty deeds. We don't really get to read about all those mighty deeds, but it just says he did mighty deeds. It goes on to say here, he killed two sons of Ariel of Moab. He also went down and killed a lion in the middle of a pit on a snowy day. That might be my favorite verse from 1 or 2 Samuel. Like, it's the sort of verse that's just begging you to stop reading, close your eyes, and take a moment to think about that scene. He went down and killed a lion in the middle of a pit on a snowy day. Right? I mean, that just kind of makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. But if you're not taking your time reading the Bible and really savoring what it says, and you're just kind of moving on through, you might glaze over a verse like that. A verse that says, this is a guy who faced a lion in a pit on a snowy day and killed him with his whatever he had on him. That just begs for a little bit more attention, doesn't it? And then there's Jesus. Rugged Jesus. Jesus, who is so often portrayed in art and literature as this soft man with a halo around his head, skin that has never been touched by the sun. But Jesus was a rugged man. He worked, he labored, he went everywhere on foot practically. This is a man who endured, who survived. The Gospels are filled with language that suggests incredible effort, stamina, and fortitude on the part of our Lord. Don't glaze over details in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, but stop and appreciate how hard his life really was. He fasted for 40 days and 40 nights, as we read in Matthew chapter 4. And there might only be one of us in this room of 200 people that can appreciate physically, emotionally, spiritually, what is involved in 40 days of fasting. But it takes a lot, and it takes a lot out of you to fast for 40 days. How about all the descriptions of his energy and his activity? And just a few examples, by the way. I did not have space on my slide or in my notes to give all the examples, but just give you a taste of this is typical language that you find in the Gospels, in Matthew 9, verse 35, for example. Typical language that you see, as it says, and Jesus was going about all the cities and the villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. Now, if you are accustomed as a 20th or 21st century person, if you are accustomed to the musical montage in a movie, and Rocky just spends 5 minutes in a really catchy tune, and at the beginning he's disheartened and doesn't know what he's going to do, and in 5 minutes he's ready to face Clubber Lang, and if that's kind of what you're used to when you read or observe or think about things, then you might read that verse and just glaze right on over it. You might read that verse and just skip right on over it. But stop and think about what this verse is saying. He went everywhere, all about the cities and the villages, teaching and proclaiming the gospel and healing every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. Now maybe a 21st century movie director might turn that into a musical montage. But don't give in to the temptation to glaze over how hard and how difficult this was and the labor that was involved. Jesus was a rugged man. And there's other verses, other examples of this as well. Time just does not permit us to talk about just how hard the life of Jesus was at times and how willing he was to be compassionate to the multitudes who flocked to him for help. Even simple phrases, and again, these are typical of what you find in the Gospels. Real simple phrases like, so Jesus and his disciples crossed the sea. Well, you think about what's involved in that. That he didn't just hop onto a ferry, all right? He didn't hop onto a ferry and buy some popcorn and sit on a ferry and cross the sea. There was physical effort involved in that. Or went up to Judea. Well, what does it mean that he went up to Judea? Well, it means he walked. Walked miles. The same is true of came to the region of Tyre. Tyre is way out of the way. And in some contexts, he would walk from the Sea of Galilee up to the region of Tyre. It's where he healed the Syrophoenician woman. And think about that. Walking mile after mile after mile. And why did he do it? Well, just to prove a point to his disciples that there was a Syrophoenician woman there that needed healing. I mean, you think about the effort that is involved in the things that Jesus did in his life. The effort that is involved in that. Are you in awe? Now, the disciples of John the Baptist came to Jesus in Luke 7, verse 21, or in that context. And they said, well, we're disciples of John the Baptist, and we're wondering, are you the one we've been waiting for? And you know what Jesus' answer was? Hold on a sec. And he went over and healed people. And he came back to them and said, you go back to John and you tell him what's going on here. You go back to John and tell him exactly what is happening here. And the miracles that Jesus performed were meant to answer the question posed by John's disciples. And they left impressed. They left convinced. They left in awe. Are we in awe? Now, maybe I'm only speaking from personal experience here, so if this doesn't apply to you, then I'm just revealing my own weakness, I suppose. But sometimes as I read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, I think I do glaze over the miracles. I think I do read verses that say that Jesus went about everywhere healing people of every kind of sickness. And he healed the multitudes. And he had compassion on the multitudes. And the multitudes pressed in on him, and all they had to do was just come close to him. Or a woman only has to touch his garment and is healed. And I read those passages because I've read them so many times before. I've been reading them since I was a little kid. Do I really appreciate them? Or have I just read them so much and so often that I am not in awe of what Jesus did anymore? Am I approaching the Gospels like a movie montage where it's just easy to maybe glaze over and fast forward through the really difficult parts and just see the interesting parts or just see the highlights without really thinking about the effort that was involved in all of that? It's a fine story, isn't it? But does it leave us changed? Does the story of Jesus touch us? It was meant to, as John puts at the end of his gospel. He said in chapter 20 and verse 30, many other signs therefore Jesus also performed in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these have been written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life. He says, you may have life in his name. He goes on to say at the end of chapter 21, verse 25, there are also many other things which Jesus did, which if they were written in detail, I suppose that even the world itself would not contain the books which were written. Now maybe we have a lot of questions about other parts of Jesus' life, right? We might wonder about his childhood. We get a snippet, right, about his childhood, a little snippet there, and then it just fast forwards on to when he's about 30 years old. And we might have a bunch of questions, a lot of curiosity about Jesus. But the things that God gave us in the Gospels, they're not meant to just quench our curiosity. They're meant to convince us that Jesus is who he claimed to be, the Son of God, who had power over physical things and spiritual things as well. He had the power to heal people as well as the authority to forgive them of their sins. So what is written maybe doesn't always satisfy our curiosity about Jesus, but what is written is meant to convince us about Jesus and lead us to a conclusion. You know, here's how I would sum it up. Before we make a few practical applications, this is the way I'd sum it up. Most of us live like we have all the time in the world. We take time for granted. We assume that we'll always have time for something later. We assume that if there is a mountain to climb, or a challenge to overcome, or a test that needs to be taken, or an athletic feat that needs to be done, we want to run a marathon, or get to the top of a mountain, or do this or that, or eat 55 hot dogs in a hot dog eating competition. And we always assume there will be time for that later. We always assume that if our marriage is struggling, we'll always have time to get to it later. Right? I can take some me time right now, and I can always get to my marriage later. We always assume that there will be another chance out there to leave an impact on our children. That I'm allowed to be selfish right now because I can just be less selfish tomorrow. I can deal with my kids later. I'll teach them that valuable lesson. I'll teach them how to fish. Teach them how to shave. Teach them how to manage a checkbook. I can teach all that stuff later. There will always be an opportunity later. And the same is true of spiritual things. We live assuming that we'll always have time later to get to the things that are so important to us, or at least what we claim are so important to us. There will always be time for it later. And what I really appreciate about the way Jesus lived is that he lived expecting that his time would be up very soon. He packed in everything that he could. His ministry was one of incredible activity and effort. And even when Jesus needed rest time, and he did need rest time, it was only so he could be recharged enough to go back and help more people. Jesus wasn't being selfish when he wanted to pray by himself, or when he wanted time to rest on the mountain alone, or when he told his disciples, "I'll catch up to you, you go on ahead." He wasn't being selfish. Even when Jesus did need rest time, it was so he could be prepared to get back to work the next day. He lived expecting that his time would be up soon. We always think we'll have more time, and many of us won't. Do hard things then. Take that musical montage apart. And instead of seeing all these things as just 5 minutes of effort that's conveniently wrapped up and neat and tidy, see the work that goes into things that are truly worth doing. Because any endeavor that is worthwhile will take work. You are not guaranteed all the time in the world. You are not guaranteed all the time in the world to just get to it later or get to it tomorrow. Like it says in the book of Proverbs, chapter 6, and verse 6, "Go to the ant, O sluggard, observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief, officer, or ruler prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and your poverty will come upon you like a vagabond and your need like an armed man." Now, we've read that verse a number of times. That's one you're very familiar with, I'm sure. Here's another verse that maybe you're not as familiar with. In Ecclesiastes chapter 10, well, it's like the way it's put here in verse 18, in a chapter on little things, right? That a little bit of effort produces great results if you just put the time in. It says in Ecclesiastes 10, verse 18, "Through indolence," that's one of my favorite words, by the way, laziness, right? Neglect. "Through indolence, the rafters sag, and through slackness, the house leaks. Men prepare a meal for enjoyment, and wine makes life merry, and money is the answer to everything." Now, Solomon's being sarcastic when he says that. He's not saying those are actually the solutions to our problems in life. He's saying we will put a big Band-Aid on all of our problems instead of putting the work into fixing them. And through laziness, your house falls apart. And we think we can just throw money at all of our problems. We think we can throw money at all of our problems. Instead of spending time with my children, I give them things. things. Instead of spending consistent time with my children, I save it all up for 1 week of vacation and think that 1 week at Disney is going to make up for the rest of the year, me coming home too late to give them a kiss goodnight. So we throw money at problems, or we throw alcohol at problems, and we try to cover up with a Band-Aid all of the things that really need a lot of work. Remember, Noah didn't build the ark in a day, although Noah building the ark would make for a nice musical montage, wouldn't it? Moses didn't cross the wilderness in a day. Joshua didn't conquer Canaan in a day. Paul didn't turn the world upside down in a day. And maybe all of these things might make for good musical montage fodder. But remember, these people did not do these things in a day or in 5 minutes. And it might take only a few minutes to read about their adventures and their accomplishments. But don't be willfully ignorant about how focused these people were. Take Hebrews 11, for example. We read about these great heroes of faith in Hebrews 11, but look at how each of them is defined by an action word. It doesn't just say that so-and-so had faith. Is it so-and-so showed his faith by an action, by his effort? Look here, for example, at verse 7 of Hebrews 11. By faith, Noah prepared, it says. He prepared the ark and prepared his life and prepared his family. Verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed. In verse 9, by faith he lived. It goes on to say in verse 17, by faith Abraham offered up. In verse 20, by faith Isaac blessed. Verse 21, by faith Jacob blessed. Verse 22, by faith Joseph gave orders. Verse 24, by faith Moses refused. Verse 31, by faith Rahab did not perish. Verse 33, by faith they conquered. By faith they obtained. By faith they quenched. By faith they escaped. These are not easy things for people to do. But by faith, they worked. By faith, they labored. Satan wants us to think that a good life is only made up of the good parts or the juicy bits. I was listening to the radio the other day, and apparently there's an app that's come out now because everything comes in the form of an app. We live in the app age. We used to live in the information age, and now things have been just dumbed down to bright colors and buttons on an app. So we live in the app age. But there's an app that's come out now that will offer to you, the reader, only the juicy parts of trashy romance novels. I'm serious. This app has just, it has pared down raunchy, stupid romance novels just down to the good part. I think the app is actually called Just the Good Parts. But that's what Satan wants us to think. Satan wants us to think that a good life is only made up of just the juicy parts, just the good parts. And you can remove all of the effort, all of the time, and just get straight to the good parts. And that's what a musical montage isn't it? In a Rocky movie, weeks of training is pared down to just a few minutes of a clever song and Rocky running on the beach. Just the good parts. And we don't see all the effort. Just the good parts. You know, you get a sidebar on the side of, websites, news websites or Facebook or whatever, advertisements. I honestly have no idea which computer algorithm said that I should see this advertisement. I have no idea. I've washed my hands of it. But the other day, as I was looking at the computer, a sidebar advertisement was advertising the Ashley Madison website, which if you don't know what that is, it's a website that offers you a chance to connect with adulterers. That's what it is. It's a social media website where if you want to have an affair, you go to this website and they'll work everything out for you. And you know what the ad said? Life is short. Have an affair. I'm not exaggerating. That's what the ad said. Life is short. Have an affair. Satan is dangling that in front of you, saying, you know what? Life should just be about the good parts. Skip the relationship. Skip the effort of building a marriage. Skip the effort that goes into sharing your life with someone for a lifetime through thick and thin, for better or worse, in sickness and in health, richer or poorer. Skip all of that part and just skip straight to the good stuff. Life is short. Have an affair. You know, of course, my retort is, life is short, why waste it on an affair? Life is short, why waste it on pornography? Life is short, why waste it lying to people and having to cover your tracks? Life is short, why waste it on an addiction, on substances that only make life shorter, literally make life shorter? Life is short, and you do not have the time to waste on garbage. You don't. Yeah, life is short. With that, I will agree. Life is short. And everything that makes life worth living, you don't get to fast forward through that. You don't get to skip the work. And whether it's marriage or raising children or preparing for leadership, that's another thing also. Maybe you aspire to be an elder someday, but you always think, I can get ready for it later. If you're 20 or 30 or 40, the time is now to start thinking about that. You don't get to just wake up one day and say, hey, I feel like being an elder today, but I haven't been doing anything for the last 30 years to get ready. You don't get to just skip all the work. You don't get to wake up one day and just be ready to be an elder. You start preparing for it now. Defeating pornography is the same way. It's not going to happen overnight. And it takes work. Changing our language or changing our thinking about language too. You know, the words that we got used to saying all those years, the words that just come out so naturally, the expletives, the things that just seem to come out so naturally because of habit, because of exposure, that doesn't just change overnight. Building quality relationships with other people. Deepening appreciation and our understanding of grace. That takes a long time. You don't get to skip over the hard parts. Do hard things because it's in the hard things of life that we find the greatest reward. It's in the things often that take the greatest effort that we're going to find the greatest treasures. Heaven's the same way, my friends. Heaven's the same way. Just read Matthew chapter 10 sometime. In that chapter, Jesus told his disciples, I know in the context he's talking to his 12 disciples, I understand that. But he said, the whole world's going to hate you on account of my name. You'll have family members who will reject you. They've so treated the master, how do you think they're going to treat you? If they treat the teacher this way, they're not going to treat the disciple any better. And I'm telling you, disciples, Jesus says, I'm telling you, that marriages, a husband and a wife, they'll be put at odds with each other over the faith. And a mother and a father. And a mother and her children. And a father and his children. But you've got to pick up your cross and carry it. And he who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. You think it's going to take some effort? You think it's going to take some hard work? It will. But fortunately, God has already done the hardest part of it. The hardest part of saving you is not what you have to do. The hardest part of saving you was sending His Son, Jesus Christ, to be your sacrifice. For Him to bear His cross and to die that ignoble death surrounded by His enemies. And to be raised up by that great power. The great power that will raise you up as well on the day of judgment. God has done the greater part, the greater effort, and we must thank Him for that. Show your appreciation then by embracing that great gift of grace and become a Christian this day. Whatever spiritual need you might have, please let it be known by coming forward as we stand and sing.